overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
That's from Porgy and Bess, George Gershwin. It ain't necessarily so. The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. You know, Methuselah lived 900 years. Yes, Methuselah lived 900 years. But who calls that living when no gal will give in to a man what is 900 years? You know, and that's, so what if, I love it. See, it changes everything. What if we could let go of the letter of the law and discover the spirit of the law? Someone put out on Facebook, they said, think about it. Adam and Eve had three sons. And they left it at that. So how did we all spawn from three sons? Well, one of them went into the land of Nod. Well, there must have been people in the land of Nod, mustn't there? So how could we go from just three boys to populating the planet? It's just a thought. And don't give it too much thought, because it's just a story. And so when you let go of the letter of the law, or you realize that it ain't necessarily so what we've been taught, then there's the possibility to discover something that's so beautiful and so fresh. We open to the mythology of our religions. And then, my goodness, you know, then every resurrection has to be your resurrection. And in order to have your resurrection, you have to have your own crucifixion. And you can't resurrect until you get off your cross. So as Marianne Williams say, get off the cross, we need the wood. And then somebody might laugh. And then there's the potential that we can take that metaphor and apply it to our lives. So I'm going to be exploring today the way it works, or the focus must be you. And how can you and I open to a direct experience of our own spiritual nature? Let me give you a taste of the unbelievable happiness of what is. And you heard me share that he talks about we have to find a path with heart. But then he said, a path of heart can only arise through a practice of least resistance. So in other words, not like Ernest Holmes would say, we're not here to deny the stuff that arises. We're here not to resist the stuff that arises. So this is how John Burney put it. He said, of course, there may still be ego flare-ups, but that's inevitable and entirely to be expected. It's just the chickens coming home to roost. Eventually, all your scattered parts, the parts of you that have been repressed, oh, Carl Jung would love this, the parts that have been cut off, the parts that have been marginalized or just forgotten, they return home to us to be integrated. So Rumi said, this being human is like a guest house. Come knocking at the door. Are your unworthiness issues, your fear, all your doubts, your concerns, I'm not enough. And they're coming home to be met with compassion and awareness and a deeper sense of truth. They come back to be forgiven, to be loved, to be embraced, and finally, ironically, to be appreciated, because they are the fuel for the fire of your own transformation. So Holmes got it wrong in my estimation. It's not about getting rid of these things and declaring their opposites, but it's realizing that they have the gold, they have the gift. He goes on to explain. So cease to turn away from what's difficult and learn to turn toward it instead. So if the issue is death, let's turn toward death. You know, every time I turn toward death, I find life. Isn't that paradoxical? I find what never died, that love that's always there, and the fullness of the heart and the tenderness of the body and the vulnerability that it requires. So it's not to not be vulnerable, it's to open to your own vulnerability. He says it requires getting out of the way and letting go of control. Oh, gee, do we have to let go of control, Shay? I wonder. You know, it requires questioning beliefs and having the willingness to not know what's going on and to not be anxious about not knowing what's going on, and what's going on then can happen the way it's supposed to. It's going to unfold the way it is, not the way you think it should. So Bruni goes on to say, real transformation requires the willingness to be fully and completely human, to have feelings, to let the heart move its energies as it needs to, and to listen to the body when it's communicating its needs or its limitations. We begin to respect this temple that we've been given miraculously and unknowingly. How did we get here? We don't know. We can't know. It is truly mind-blowing mystery. So we begin to have real reverence for this life that we've been given, because in any moment, this stuff can bubble up and pop. This existence will be gone. So he concludes, whatever is present, believe it or not, will lead you home to your own freedom. Whatever is arising is here for us. Kat, what is it here? For us. Everything that's arising is here for us. And as you gradually come to understand how this process works, you can relax and find comfort, simply trusting that an inner guidance will show you the way home. That an inner guidance will show you the way home. When I studied with Jeff Foster in Colorado, the one message was, don't abandon yourself. When yourself, your subjective, your unconscious, is showing you all those unhealed parts of yourself, they're coming because they have the gift. You know, in my very resistance is my acceptance. In my very fear is my faith. If I can open to that fear, you know, could I embrace that part of myself? So yeah, so this guy is kind of shaking up the institution here about finding something that works for you and me. And on this book on aging, she talks about the necessity of silence. She's the thing called noble silence. And then noble silence is where you just live in silence. But then there is a chosen silence, which means I choose to surround myself with not a lot of talking heads, especially my own talking head, or people who want to talk all the time. That in fact, silence is a way of life. And in that silence, there's an inner guidance system that awakens. And so this book on aging, she talks about having a quiet heart and a clear eye. And she talks about, and I thought of you, Kat, when you were talking about your intention, struggling with intention. She said it's very important to be clear on what your intention is. So if we're working with the unbelievable happiness of what if the intention could be really simple? To be here now with what is, you know, to not resist anything, to open to what is. Now she says you take that intention and you match it with your attention. So I'm sitting out in the garden, and my intention is to be with what is. And so my attention is on the birds at the bird feeder. My attention is on the sun that's coming up on the horizon. My attention is on the goldfish in the pond. My attention is on the wind blowing through the trees. My intention is to be in the present moment. And so then she says, as your attention and your intention find harmony with one another, She said, then you move into your fourth mind. And she said, this is a mind that is at ease. Jody and I were talking about, could we just let it be easy? Because in the infinite scheme of things, the universe doesn't effort. It's only you and I that effort and struggle. And when I hear people saying, oh, it's so hard and I'm struggling with it, it's because they're in the way. They haven't found that which doesn't struggle. So my intention is to be here now in the presence of the one that knows no other, to put my attention on whatever the moment is bringing me, to allow that ease to unfold, and then, according to this book on aging, you will arrive at a natural joy, the joie de vivre, the joy of life itself. Now, I'm kind of feeling into her meditation practice, and then she said, then you get the gift. And guess what the gift is? The gift is curiosity, fascination. You become fascinated with the guidance that's coming from within. Because it's not coming from the mind that wants to be in control. It's coming from that I don't know place that's always fresh and alive and exciting, because it's something we can't know with the mind. So last Sunday, this gentleman handed me a book that he'd written. He's from Tennessee, and it's called Revisions. And it's a very simple little book of seeing your old stories with new eyes. So we sang, he played a piece a couple of weeks ago, Everything Old is New Again. What if, when change going to come, it's going to come by you seeing with new eyes? You know, when I see myself as a victim, that things are happening in kingdom number one, the to-me consciousness, then I'm going to blame it, and I'm going to try to blame them and fix conditions. But when you realize it's here all for me, you shift, you begin to say, ah, could my intention be to claim the gift in this obstacle that is really showing me that I need to see things with fresh eyes? So he starts off in his little poetic book about talking about what an artist would be. And he tells the story of the starving artist. There's never enough. I want to be in a show, but no one's put me in a show. And so I'm just going to give up and not do my art. He said, that was my old story. Then he shifts into his new story, and he says, I was born an artist. I was born of the creator. I was born to create. My life is a canvas, and each day is my brushstroke. On my palette are the colors of the universe, and each color is a shade of light. I rush to my easel each morning with a yearning of my heart and passion of my eyes. There are no grand openings anymore. There are no blue ribbons. This is a work in progress called my life. This is a creation that I create for me, and I will do so until I draw my last breath. He's no longer making his art conditional on what the world sees. And then he goes on to talk about a pond and how our life is like a pond. And for so many of us, it's a stagnant pond where the water's not moving. And you look in your pond and you can't see to the bottom because it's so murky with your tale of woe and your history that's so ugly. And you're identifying with that old pond. But then you shift kingdoms. And he said, now something is flowing into me and something is flowing out of me. He's no longer the stagnant pond. One outstretched hand takes while another gives. With everything I receive, something must be surrendered. I do not resist the pendulum push and pull of life. Rather, now I embrace it, reflecting only my reflection in the pond. Soon all is clear. So he's shifting his focus away from the story of how awful it was to how now it's getting clearer and clearer. We sing a song, I can see clearly now. The pain is gone. I can see all the obstacles in my way. I can see the dark clouds that had me blind. And then I affirm it's going to be a bright, bright, sunshiny day. The whole book is filled with one shift of story, old story, new story. Last one, he talks about silence. And he does this wonderful story about how I like to sleep in the mornings, and that damn mockingbird starts singing at 5 a.m. And I put the pillow over my head, and I say, can't you realize you're ruining my silence? And his whole thing, and he said, and then so I get up angry, and then the voices in my head start coming. Why, damn it, can't I find the silence? Old story. I don't want to read the old stories. They depress me. I don't even know why I put the old stories in. New stories are good. He says, like a grandmother who's placing a towel over a parakeet's cage in the evening, I do the same to my own chattering mind. Have you ever put that over the chattering mind? All of a sudden it becomes quiet. What if your chattering mind is like that little bird in the cage? And I find myself using the metaphor of open the door of the cage, of your stories in your mind, and let that little bird fly. I'm telling you, that bird's not going to be interested in going back to that cage. Anyway, so his grandmother puts the thing over the cage of the mind. And I do it day and night, anytime I choose. I contemplate before I speak, and oftentimes I remain comfortably silent, taking in the poetry of another's words or listening to the Creator's breath as it passes through me. And there are times I begin a sentence, and then I excuse myself before its completion, realizing it wasn't worth the bother of the sound coming out of me. I should learn that one. I have become like a master of jazz, knowing that some of the greatest songs are because of the spaces that are between the notes, that without the silence, we wouldn't even have music. So in his little book called Revisioning, he's just shifting who he was and who he wants to be now. So each of us gets to have that journey from the old self, change gonna come. Last inspiration is Mark Nepo, The One Life We're Given. Somehow I gravitate toward poets because they speak to the soul. And remember, on the path of heart, I need that soul language. I'm kind of crazy. So here's the wisdom coming from this poet. He says, we're part of a larger pattern of life that's fulfilling itself. Now rest in that awareness. There's a larger pattern. What is life wanting to do? It wants to unfold itself. It wants to flower. It wants to bear fruit. And it has to do it through you in your life and through me in my life. So to see ourselves as something so much bigger than the skin-encapsulated ego with a belief system that was raised on a tree of beliefs, and you're all the fruit that's fallen from that tree, I tell you right now. Secondly, he says, each of us is born with an instinct to flow and through the center of life itself. There is an instinct within each of us that wants to be who we are, to express who we are. You know, there's that little painting out there called The Essential Self, which is a class we taught here. And each of the students in that final project were to take a little tile and put what they said. It was done maybe 20 years ago. My tile is in there. And my little soul, when we did that practice, said, be who you are. Right? So that's that instinct within the soul that says, you better be who you are. I like to quote Bernie Siegel, who said, be who you is and not who you ain't, because if you ain't who you is who you ain't, and if you is who you ain't who you is. Anyway, be who you are. He goes on to say, all paths lead to the same center of life. Whatever that path that you follow, if it's the path of music, it's the path of art, it's the path of rescue. Trey gets so much joy out of rescue. It's the path of shamanism. We're going to have that beautiful Stephen Feely next week. What an organic way to connect to spirit. Some find their path through the life of expression. He said, I come alive through the inquiry of my writing. But no one path or flow of aliveness is more important than anyone else. They're all, he said, any more than the liver is more important than the kidneys, how they help our body. So he goes on to say, the center of all life that draws us to it and pumps us back into our days is the beat that keeps the world together. To think of ourselves as the beat that keeps the world together. Wow. So when I say the focus is you, you're a thread in the beat of humanity and the thread of life. You're an essential part for the creative flow of life itself. Wow, that gets pretty big then. It's not about getting your bills paid and whether people like you or not, or whether you should have your hair dyed blue or yellow or pink or green. When following this beat, he says, we're drawn into the heart of oneness. The heart of oneness. You know, the poets take you into the heart of oneness. Oh, I love the oneness thing. Don't you love the oneness thing? You know, all those little plants in the other room, these plants. You know, that's a mingrelia. Someone brought that to the other center. This is my 30th year. So that was brought maybe 25 years ago. It was a little twig with one leaf on it. It's been sitting in that corner, doing her thing. What if each of us are like that? We're just here to express the uniqueness of our own self. Being human, however, we can't stay in the heart of oneness, but we must live in the world the way that our blood cannot just stay in our heart, but must return to our hands so they can do their work in the world. So once freed of our self-importance, our hands are filled with a mysterious aliveness that conveys the strength of the world. Taking the chance to touch and to be touched, we can inhabit the flow of aliveness we're born with and become a conduit between it and the work that needs to be done through us. So yes, there's this presence, this beautiful life form within us, but it needs to move out into action, into service, in whatever that might look like in your life. And the beautiful thing is you get to inquire. I love what Kat says. She said, I want to clean up the oceans. And then she wants to help animals. So you start right in your own backyard. We got some rivers out here that need to be cleaned up. The other week, Trey and I, one of our neighbors, he's the head of Neighborhood Watch, they had abandoned their home and their dogs were tied up in the backyard. And, you know, we had a lot of rain. And it looked like a trash heap. So he called the non-emergency police number and they came out. And they informed him that the dogs were being fed and that if anybody were to go on that land, it would be trespassing. So the week progressed, and one of the neighbors saw this, and Trey had talked to them, and the next thing you know, he's going over there, being told he would be arrested for trespassing, he's feeding the dogs that are chained up in the backyard, standing in their poop and all this sort of stuff. A week passes. Finally, the animal control people came with the police, and those dogs were rescued from the backyard. Yes. So you do what you gotta do. You know, you gotta squeak when you gotta squeak. He says, so what is your spirit path? He asks. How do you come alive and help keep the world together? How do you receive the flow of life and that draws you to its center? Discovering this, personalizing this, and relating to this is how we gather our being into a force that can be of use in the world. It's to just stay in the question, how can I serve? It's the little things. It's not the big things. This is another way to say that we're born with a dormant set of gifts that we need to inhabit in order to help each other become complete. Through our absorption of what is life-giving, through our reaching with open hands to meet the needs of the world, through our effort to stay connected, and through our courage to remain kind. So what are the gifts that you possess? You know, Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss. My beloved Helen Street, she used to say, I struggled with following your bliss. What are the gifts that I bring to the world? And she said, the only thing that I could think of was, everybody says I talk too much. Maybe that's the gift that I bring to the world. And every time Helen spoke, she spoke from the depth of that unconditional love, and she wasn't afraid to speak her truth. So yeah, maybe the world complains. You can tell also what your bliss is when you go to the library, if they still have them. What section of the library do you hang out in? I was always hanging out in the horticulture section, reading books on flowers and trees and anything wild and beautiful. And maybe I'm here to, I don't know, take the wisdom of that and bring it into my life. Lastly, he says, beneath the intensity of our inevitably personal journey, each of us is part of a larger pattern of life that's fulfilling itself. Wow. So when I say the focus must be you, that's a big deal. Not you as an individual who's separate, who has needs that need to be met, but an individual you, an individualization of you from the one life that is here to add its piece to the puzzle of humanity, right? Each of us. So let's just take a moment and breathe into the sacred now. My intention is to offer this gift that each of us has to life. And so now my intention is clear, and the attention then would be to open to that gift. Pay attention when that gift is unfolding itself. Maybe it's the gift of communication. Maybe it's the gift of touch. Maybe it's the gift of empathy and compassion. And so as my intention is to give the gift and my attention is placed on that felt awareness, there is a sense of ease knowing that I am not the doer, but that this divine presence, which I have put my intention and attention on, is effortlessly and easily revealing itself. So what it does is it reveals itself through each of us in its own creative way as the universe. A natural joy arises from within. The joie de vivre, the joy of being alive, the aliveness of this sacred moment. And in that curiosity awakens the final stage of this most amazing thing called life. Curious, how can I give this gift? How can I serve in a more meaningful way? How can I say yes to life with all her chaos and not drown in the chaos, but can be that voice of a revision story and have the new story that this too is good, this too is God, and this too is here for the evolution of humanity that must begin within me right now. I claim the gift of awareness as I trust in the unfoldment of life with all her mystery and beauty. Accepting the blessing in advance, we smile, knowing all is well, all the time. And so it is. Don't you feel kind of like a flower that just opened? Does it kind of feel like that? Yeah. Do this. Yeah, it's not that difficult, is it? If a flower can do it, you can do it. Can our beautiful ushers come forward? Thank you. And take your offering and put it in your hand if you have one, or not, place your hand on your heart and say, divine love consecrates my gift. It goes forth to heal, to bless, and to prosper. It returns to be multiplied abundantly. And I am prospered. What do you want?
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new world.